Hi, I'm Graham Lasso, and you're listening to Eat, Sleep, Chelsea Repeat with Chris, Craig, and Brady.
Welcome to the Eat, Sleep, Chelsea Repeat pod. Headline this week, Chelsea one step forward and one step back in the Club World Cup. Today I'm joined by my brother Craig and our good friend Brady.
Guys, Did anyone get the flamenco reference or not?
Well, in Chris's defence, it is before 10 a.m. in the UK here. We're trying to record after the game, so coming up with an amazing pun on a Saturday morning is difficult. And we thought Chelsea didn't put much effort in the second half, so we won't put much effort into the head.
We've got a few things to go through, because obviously we weren't able to review LAFC, and that would have been a much more positive review than I'm sure what's about to follow, maybe. We can get straight into the sort of the game and talk about some of the stats, if we like. Obviously, LAFC game for Chelsea, that was a game that we won, which was nice, 2-0. So goals from Neto and Fernandes. 2.24 expected goals for Chelsea versus 0.85 for LAFC. And if we flip it completely for the Flamengo game, obviously we lost 3-1. Neto with the goal again for us. We actually ended the game with 10 men. And 2.6 XG for Flamengo and 1.1 for Chelsea. So almost a complete reverse. Let's get into likes and dislikes. I'll come to you first, Brady. What do you think?
I think that we've seen, especially in the first game, we've seen that we do have options in a lot of areas of the pitch. Obviously, it's difficult now because my like wasn't going to involve Jackson. Obviously, he had a bit of a mare last night, to say the least. But it's a lot of people have been saying it's like, you know, Dilap or Jackson. I think you can just celebrate that we have, you know, Dilap and Jackson. They're different options. Some people will say Jackson maybe is not up to it. But, with the Sugo coming in, you've got a Sugo and Caicedo. We've just got more options. I'm a little bit worried that Malo Gusto at right back in terms of depth, but and Kuka maybe a fullback. We haven't quite got the depth that we need. But in every other spot, maybe not a centre-back as well, we do have a lot of options. And the squad's filling out and, you know, gaining experience. And there's a lot of, you know, when you talk online, there's a lot of, like, you know, Team Jackson or Team Dilap or whatever, like, whatever you want to call it, you know. Lavia and Enzo, probably one of those is going to have to maybe have reduced minutes, especially after last night where, you know, he adjusted the system of three midfielders and didn't really work. So, but I think we need to celebrate that we have a lot of options now in different areas of the pitch.
Nice. So, Craig?
Yeah, I was going to talk about tactical flexibility. I do think, obviously, that's been that was more after the first game than the second game, but it was sort of being able to do those sort of underlaps on the right-hand side of the pitch. I think the chemistry between Neto and Palmo was looking really good. And yeah, just sort of the tactical flexibility. And I know Maresca's often talked about players that can play different positions and things like this. Now, obviously, after yesterday's game, probably backfired a little bit, trying a few too many things maybe, but it is nice to have a lot of different players that can play a lot of different roles. Even if you go to like centre back, like Chalobah can play right back and centre back, you know, we're going to see, you know, James in different positions. Kukurea can invert into midfield. He can go out left, you know, and overlap as well. He can come into the centre of the pitch and play that 10 role and crash the box. He scored a lot of goals this season doing that. So we've got a lot of players that can play a lot of different positions, and that, you know, I know Philippe Luiz after the game last night said, you know, he stayed up for four nights or something because of Chelsea's tactical shape was like the best that he's ever, you know, scouted or something. And I do think that tactical flexibility will give teams a lot of issues as they come up against us, because even when you see the team sheet before the game, and we did it last night, you don't really know what formation or what roles we're going to play. So it's really hard to prepare a team for that.
Yeah. I think for me, likes was I saw something for the first time in a long time where I thought we looked miles better than what I've seen before. That was the first half against LAFC. Had the Caicedo-Lavia partnership and sort of Kukure inverting with James kind of right back. And I think, you know, watching a lot of the games this season and last season under Poch, you just feel like it was kind of getting slightly better this season with some of the more structural stuff. And then I really like what I saw, I think, against LAFC. I thought that was a real huge step forward in terms of defensive stability, as we've seen how quickly that can fall apart when you don't select the right people, as we saw yesterday. So, yeah, I think I'm liking the direction that we could be going in. Obviously, that would require some consistency with selection on that. So, let's see how we get on. Dislikes, Brady. There might be a few of these.
I mean, I there's some dislikes that I'll leave for the temps because they're for specific people. But I think there was a little bit of an overreaction last night or yesterday afternoon, Philadelphia time. I think that this tournament is an odd one because it's monetarily very lucrative, obviously. But most of the players are supposed to be on the beach, and you know we had a bit of a ding dong in WhatsApp last night. You can go both ways. You can say, well, they're paid a lot, so you know, put up and shut up. But you know, a lot of these players mentally will be usually recovering or going to an international. This isn't the same as going to like the World Cup, is it, with your country? They're trying to build it up as that, but it isn't. It's completely different. You know, it's a lot of these players. Honestly, they don't want to be there, but you know, maybe they don't. Like there's a little bit of that. And in football, 2-4%, which I think we saw last night at Flamengo, like it was a final for them. You could tell that, like, that, you know, they had 80% of their fans there to our 20%. Obviously, in America, that's going to be pretty standard. It was a massive game for them. It felt like a bigger game for them than for us. And I understand it. And I'm not saying the players, like, you know, they've got to give everything on the pitch. But I think if you see some players dropping off 3-4% after an end of a long season, 60 games or whatever it was, I think it's pretty natural. And it's just, you know, Maresca changed the tactics, talk about that later. But I just feel, think there's a bit of an overreaction. I just think, you know, we're very likely beat Tunis. And then we'll have a go versus Bayern in the last 16. And if you lose, you go home. I mean, I know that sounds silly, but it's a bit of a weird tournament where it's just basically a money pot. I know it's a trophy, but it's just basically a bit of a money grab, really. Just try and get as much prize money as you can in a weird time in the season and then go home or win it. That's the way I see it.
Well, look, let's be honest. If they didn't have the prize money, that no one would be paying any attention. In fact, you
know, I'm not going to go into, like, you know, some more deeper stuff about football, but no TV company wanted to touch this tournament. It was offered to every player, Sky, everyone. No one wanted it. So you can tell that there wasn't really any backing or anything for it. So I'll leave
it. Well, I think if you speak to a lot of our friends that are football fans, no one's watching it.
No, like, I mean, I am not. I mean, I signed up for DAZN to watch the Chelsea games. I haven't watched a minute of the other games. At all.
You know the games are actually on Channel 5. I think all the UK ones are. So
even so, like, I'm not watching a minute. I mean, maybe I'll watch the final. I might watch the final of Chelsea not in it. Other than that, I'm not bothered. I'll be honest.
I think when you start looking at some of the results in this tournament already, I think interest is growing quite quickly. I think a lot of people might tune in to watch Chelsea get slapped up by Flamengo if that game happened again. You know, you've seen,
I'm not sure about that,
Paris Saint-Germain last.
I think, to be honest, it got off on a terrible foot when Bayern won 10-0. I think people...
they only just scraped through yesterday. They scored, four minutes ago to win.
Yeah, but it's just, you know.
I think Auckland FC, City FC are probably miles away from every other team in the competition, yeah, which is a shame.
Yeah.
But it's just... Look, it seems like a much bigger deal for, like, teams that are not in Europe, I'll put it that way. That's the way I see it. Like, you know, and that's fine. Like, especially for a team like Flamengo, like, obviously got a really passionate fan base. Like, you know, Felipe, he's former Chelsea. Fair play to the man. Looks like a good manager. Looked like a good team. Jorginho went over there. They look like a very good team, to be honest. And we weren't massive favourites for that game. So, odds-wise. So, but yeah. But, like, I can't... I mean, it sounds weird as a fan. Like, if we just kind of just, like, don't play amazing and we go out in the last 16 and pick up 40 million, I don't think, like, you know, you've got to tear up the script. You just go to the new season. I don't really see the big drama of last night. I don't really get it whatsoever, to be honest.
Craig, what have you got for dislikes?
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about the intensity of our game last night. But I left the game thinking that they obviously managed the game a lot better. It did feel a bit like men against boys to an extent with the referee, obviously horrendous referee, but that's to be expected in games like this, you know, buying into every foul, but getting booked for, like, you know, jumping in Kukares, you know, so naive, jumping in, you're winning the ball, but thinking that that won't be a foul at this level. Well, sorry, not at this level, sorry, but with this type of referee. And then just the intensity, you know, players not standing up for each other. I actually left the game, and this is a blasphemous thing to say, thinking that I wish we were more like Arsenal in terms of personality. I don't think Arsenal would have lost that game last night. It would their team, their core players, their intensity and mentality that they play with, players like Gabriel, Saliba, Declan Rice, you know, those type of players. I looked at Chelsea last night, and I just thought they were getting a bit bullied on the pitch. And no one, and maybe you could say that was because we weren't up for the game as much as the other team, but that's what it looked like. You know, for whatever reason, they were well up for it. They were more physical. They were standing up for each other more. And we were just, you know, not at it at all. It didn't feel like the game was important to us. And maybe because it wasn't. But, you know, when you're watching a game like that between two sides and one side looks a bit, you know, bullied by the other team, I think that is what it ends up looking like.
Yeah, certainly. There was definitely evidence of that, for sure. Dislike for me was, I think Maresca sort of, his messaging is just very confusing. He spoke before the game about rotating players. I don't know if he knows what that means. Like, rotating players is kind of like, you don't play Jackson, you play Delap. You don't play Neto right wing, you play Madueke, because that's like the backup or, the other player who's for that position. His rotation is, I'll still play some of the same players, but I'll just move them into different positions, which isn't rotation for me. You know, yesterday he made four changes to the team, and the whole thing fell down pretty quickly. He also made four subs. He made five subs against LAFC in conditions that weren't sweltering heat, that weren't difficult. Yeah, but yesterday, where it's boiling hot, we're getting outmatched, outrun. He only made four. There are so many people who haven't even kicked a ball for us. So I don't know what this rotation is, but I assumed it was giving people minutes when got them. But he's not used quite a lot of the players, which is strange. And some of them fine, like Jorgensen, not expecting that. Maybe a Chimpong could have come on, like yesterday, for example. We haven't, Asugo's getting got a couple of minutes, but we haven't seen Dewsbury Hall, Santos. We haven't seen Saar, who I know a lot of people are excited to see. Anselmino, would like to see him. Instead, we're seeing people that we've already seen before, and I don't understand the logic behind it. I think it's confusing, and it sort of gives mixed messages about what he's trying to do. I know he said he was trying to try some stuff out yesterday, but we've seen some of the stuff he's tried out before and it was rubbish. So was he keep trying all this same stuff, like James in midfield? We saw Enzo in 10. I mean, that was both those things basically completely killed us in this game. Gusto.
But you wanted Palmer at right wing. If he's not playing Enzo at 10, who else is he going to play at 10?
Well, there's so many. We've spent so much. We've got so many people. Where's We've got Dewsbury Hall, we've got Nkunku, we've got,
Nkunku.
We can try, we've got Guyu, we've got, I can't remember who else I was going to say, but there are, you know, there are Santos, there are people there who you could give a game to. Enzo played 80, how long did he play yesterday? 82 minutes in a 10. Did we need to see that for 82 minutes? Crazy.
He adjusted his system. I mean, I was going to talk about Maresca and Freeza, but if we didn't combine Freeza with both ways, I'll just talk about Maresca now. I think it's like, he is a Pepite, Diet Pep. And sometimes these kind of managers do weird stuff. I don't know if you remember when we won the Champions League final, there's a lot of furore because he moved Gundogan, didn't he? He did something weird in that game in the Champions League final we won, right? And it's like, just
random. He didn't play Rodri.
I can't remember it, but it just says random stuff, right? Just in big games. And this was similar to that. Like, it's pretty clear that, like, Reece James has been tearing it up at right back recently, you know, getting his rhythm back. And he just slots him in midfield when you've got Lavia and Asugo and Santos there ready to go. It's very odd. There's just no reason to put Reece James back into midfield whatsoever. He doesn't like he's enjoying it. He hasn't got the legs for it. He just put him back at right back. Also, that meant that Malo Gusto started. Malo Gusto should not be starting for the football club at the moment. No way. And that means, yeah, me and Chris talked about maybe putting Palmer at right 10. That's maybe when you get some recruitment. Maybe they talk about getting Jao Pedro. Maybe Jao Pedro can go into 10 or something like that. Or Kudus or whoever they're going to get. It's like, why did he rip up the script for this game? I don't understand it. And I don't know if he underrated, overthought it, kind of underrated the opposition. I mean, it also Neto, he just moved all the chess pieces into worse positions. Yeah. And Neto scored, fair enough. But other than that, he wasn't, I mean, played pretty well. He had some really, really nice moments, but he had a really, really good game at right wing. And then he just moves into left wing.
Where he's not a left winger, Neto, is he?
Yeah, he's naturally been weaker the whole season. Okay, yeah, he scored a goal. I mean, even when he went through, he looked a bit awkward. Like, when he was going through on goal, I don't think he was going to score because his body position was a bit weird. It was like, he's just not used to coming in from the left in his body shape at all. Yeah. He put Palmer right wing. I think he put Palmer right wing because he thinks, well, if we get a 10, maybe like Willian or Jao Pedro or whoever I said, maybe Palmer can be adjusted to go up. But not in this game. Like, just keep it the same. And just, if you want, rotate and have, you know, against Tunis, then you start doing tactical messabouts. This game was a game where you just start Lavia. Start Lavia.
What I would say about Lavia is I don't think they can start him in back-to-back games 5 days apart.
Enzo's the player we've been playing there all season.
Andre Santos, there was so much hype for Andre Santos. He hasn't played a minute yet.
I don't think Santos, internally, Santos is got the hype that people on X have potentially shown him.
It's pretty clear that Reece James cannot start midfield anymore. He doesn't want to. He doesn't want to start there. Like, we tried it. He did it for Wigan years ago when he was a kid in the Championship, and it worked out. It's not working out anymore. He hasn't got the legs.
I mean, he's about 15 injuries since then as well. Like, he can't run as... Like, he looks so good at right back.
It's not like we've got a situation.
A little bit about Palmer right wing, because I think one of the issues and what I said, I think Palmer would be a really good right winger, but he is elite at 10. And one of the reasons I think that is the case is touches in the game. Last night he had 32 touches in the game, which is less than half of what he had in the previous game where he plays 10. And it's about 40 less than his average across all the games.
Context of everyone else? Like, I'm sure all of our touches were down. I mean, our possession was absolutely horrific, basically, for the majority of the game. We had 38% possession at half-time, I think.
Yeah, but...
37%. That is appalling. Focus.
Yeah, but the Palmer obviously was... I mean, even the commentators talked about it multiple times in the commentary. Palmer's not involved in the game.
It's funny how in the second half, we had 61% possession. And I think a lot of that happened after the subs. And we had 10 men.
But obviously, when they go up and when they go take the lead, obviously they sit back a bit. But the focus I want to make about is Palmer, because we had a long conversation this week in WhatsApp about him potentially moving to right wing. And I think one of the issues that people don't see with Palmer is the build-up. And we really struggled in build-up in that first half. It's not going to appear on the stat sheet. People aren't going to see. It's not goals and assists, so maybe some fans won't be able to see it. But in terms of the important moments in the season and things like, you think about the Liverpool goal where, you know, he loses Curtis Jones and plays it to Neto, Enzo scores, puts us 1-0 up in a massive game at home to Liverpool. Or you even look back to the start of the season where he's playing deeper. Do you remember that pass he played through to Neto for Jackson's goal against Newcastle? That doesn't appear on the stat sheet. But these are all important moments because Palmer drifts in that 10 spot to so many different positions, and he's so creative on the ball and can get us out of tight spots. You know, they really pressed us last night for Menko. We couldn't do anything versus that. We looked absolutely devoid of ideas, and Palmer's not even touching the ball. And why is that? Because he's stuck out on the wing, not contributing to build up whatsoever. In fact, Cole Palmer played... So Chelsea lost 10 league games, including last night, 10 games in league formats last season. Cole Palmer didn't play in 10 in 4 of those games. So out of the 10, so we lost 40% of the games that Cole Palmer didn't play at 10. That's an unbelievable stat. because Chelsea only lost, you know, 9 games in the Premier League last year. And if you look at those games, Man City at home, he was on the right wing. Villa away, he was on the right wing. Obviously, Arsenal away, he didn't play. And last night, he played on the right wing against Flamengo. Those are games that we were hopeless in, really. You know, the build-up, everything just got totally lost in those games. So I think people are massively undervaluing the importance of Cole Palmer, not just in the statistical point of view, but how important he is to Chelsea overall as part of the build-up and the possession-based team that we are.
Yeah, and I think disagreeing. I'll just quickly disagree with that, because I think what happened on Monday against LAFC was pretty clear to see for me in the first half, which was this is a game where we're completely dominating the ball. So I know you mentioned about moving the ball forward. Obviously, that wasn't an issue at all. The issue came quite very obviously when we started moving the ball into the attacking areas, and Palmer couldn't turn on the ball. He couldn't get the ball. He doesn't have the control or the understanding.
What game are you talking about that? Sorry.
The game on Monday, the LAFC game.
The game where we had 65% possession.
Exactly right, yeah. So we have the ball, and Palmer was he struggled in the game. Like he couldn't get the ball
in the game at all. He was one of our best players.
Okay, in your opinion. So what happened was the ball kept coming into the attacking areas, and he kept getting the ball and he couldn't turn. If you go watch the first half again, I've rewatched it a couple of times, he really, really struggled with receiving the ball in tight spaces because he's not used to it. He's used to coming deep, coming deep, getting the ball where it's nice and open, or getting the ball in the wing where it's nice and open. I think he recognised the game on Monday. There is a need for Palmer to get the ball and receive space. Now, you can either play him in this 10 where he drops deep, and that's fine. Obviously, that becomes an issue then in the attacking phases. Or you put him on the wing, and you give him the opportunity to do that, because obviously we saw that in the second half where he was doing his most dangerous work when he was cutting in from the right. And I think as the games progress for us this season, I do think there is a need to find a player to give him more touches in the box where he can receive the ball and be more dangerous. I think getting the ball at, like, you know, in DM and playing it wide, I just think there are people who could do that.
Obviously, yeah, but he's getting into that role and then getting forward as well. Like, he's giving us an extra man in build up.
I think you struggled yesterday because we've had two slow people in midfield who couldn't do that in Enzo and James. I think when you put people who can do that, you release Palmer and you give him better opportunities. I'm pretty sure that will happen this season.
But you're just halving his touches. You know that the wingers don't touch the ball as much as central players.
I'm giving him touches in areas where we're going to score goals.
No,
and he hasn't scored an open play in 25 games.
Our wing is just glued to the touchline. I don't know if you've seen Neto.
You can see that he's trying to change that, isn't he? Because he tried to move Gusto as an overlapping wing back.
Yeah, he tried something last night and it went horribly wrong, yeah.
Well, his issue was in midfield for me yesterday. Nothing to do with... Obviously, Delap had probably about the same touches we saw from Lukaku, so yeah. Nothing to do with touches.
I think most people would say that looked horrendous yesterday. And
definitely, I wouldn't start Enzo or James in midfield in those areas ever again.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we don't see Cole Palmer at right wing for me.
That's the issue, isn't it? Like, I said that you can put Palmer right wing if there's a good 10 to replace him.
Exactly, fine. If we sign a 10 that can play there and do everything like
Jao Pedro's heavily linked, he can play 10, Kudus, or whoever.
Even Jao Pedro would struggle to help us in build-up like Palmer does.
Yeah, I agree. Let's just say you pick up a really good 10. I don't know, maybe
this
someone...
people don't realise.
Santos is a really good player to try to see if he can do it. Why don't they try that?
He's done it for a season for
Strasbourg, but for some reason he can't get a game.
There's clearly something going on recruitment-wise, because he wouldn't... I don't think he'd try this in this kind of game if there wasn't some noise from him or some internal rumours that they're going to buy 10, I think. Because I think he wouldn't try otherwise. So clearly there's clearly something going on.
I think he's seen something for sure.
But like the issue as well is, like, you know, I haven't always been Neto's biggest fan, but Neto's been really good this tournament, obviously. But like, you just shift him out to the left. And then what do you do with Madueke? There's other problems that are created.
Madueke could be sold.
Yeah, okay, all right. But Chris, like, what I'm saying is, like, basically, like, if you put Palmer right, you've got Willian, Neto, and Madueke, three players at best positions right wing. I mean, it's not ideal. You've got the manager squad
exactly,
as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
like, You can't just go, oh, this player's rubbish, this player's rubbish. Like, Neto is poor on the left. He's much worse than he is on the right. He's a thoroughbred right winger, inverting. So,
I just don't understand why you would do change something that's been so effective for us.
All I'm saying is, if you're going to change the chess pieces, you're going to take Palmer out of the 10, you better put someone good in there. That's what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely. Like, and that's not Enzo, and that's not Santos, and that's not, all these type of players that are sort of deeper players. Yeah, for sure.
I think people are going to be surprised with Santos. I think he can play further forward than people are suggesting.
Well, let's see, but he hasn't kicked a ball. It's like William. We don't know. Actually,
He's 21. Well, he's 21 and he's never played a minute of really competitive
football. We're starting to talk about the players, so we might do temps, eh?
Yeah.
Let's do some temps.
Time to see whose form's on top, who's heating up, whose temperature's dropped, who's been playing well and who's not. It's freezing, warming up, boiling hot.
Brady, the freezer awaits.
I'm my first. Oh, easiest freezer ever. It's Malagusto.
Wow, that isn't the easiest freezer for me. That's crazy.
I mean, he was absolutely appalling the second half against LAFC. He was out-jumped yesterday for that corner. That's a clutch moment as well. Like, when you go 1-1 and they get a goal, and if you just defend that corner properly, which he can't do, you just maybe ride it out. And then we just, you know, it goes 1-1, then... I'm not saying Jackson wouldn't do what he did, but it's just like, it's little moments where, like, you need players when it goes 1-1 and you have a set piece and things like that to be solid. He isn't solid. Attacking-wise, I think he put a cross into the box yesterday. I think that's the first time we've done that in about 6 months. Like, and that's his main skill. And I know he isn't in positions to do that, but he looks... I think if Maresca's manager, I think we've just got to sell him. He doesn't look at all adaptable. He's so rusty at right wing back now, or whatever you call it, like advanced right back, that he looks withered, to be honest. He looks washed. I think you've got to sell him.
When he gets into these central areas as well, he can't head the ball. Like, the ball's gone over his head like a few times.
He looks mentally gone. I don't know if the conference league has done him, where he got hooked to James and they won the game. But like, he looks gone as well. Like, every time he goes to do something positive like he used to, he just does something negative.
It's actually crazy.
He's overthinking everything. He's so much information in his brain, probably. Like,
he couldn't put the foot. A lot of players do this. Like, he puts his foot on the ball to draw the press to try, and they do that so that basically you can draw the press and maybe pass through the press. But he does it and then just passes it backwards. Like, doesn't need to, like, just overcomplicate everything. There was one situation last night where, like, a 30-yard pop shot where he could just give it to Palmer.
Yeah. Oh, that's so frustrating.
I mean, I'm not being funny. Everyone on this podcast probably got a better shot at Malagusto outside the box. I mean, talk about P-roller. I mean, unbelievable. So, I'm not trying
that's
to get
on the penalties.
But sometimes, it's like when Pep came in. There are certain players, when Pep first came in, he went, "This is not good for my system." It's like Sterling. He just thinks, right, Sterling, Chilwell, all these players, you're good players. Obviously, different kind of players because they're more experienced or whatever. But there's certain, when you've got this rigid system, there's some players who work and there's some players who don't. And Malagusto is a marauding right back who needs minutes in that position. So that's why he was maybe linked to Liverpool and things like, we've said about Liverpool or United or something. Like, under Amorim. I mean, under Amorim, he'd be great because he'd just be up and down, up and down. But in this system, he's got no future, I don't think, unless he massively improves. And I don't think there's any noise of him being sold, but I am very worried about right back. Because if you're going to put stuff in Reece James in midfield, we are incredibly weak at right back. And, there's a lot of other teams in the league, obviously Trent's gone to Real Madrid and Liverpool have lost him, but they've got Frimpong and they've got Conor Bradley. I mean, they're stacked at right back. So, yeah, I'm worried about that position and he's really, really disappointing at the moment.
I'd say this... I'd say the same at left back as well. It's a very similar situation as well, right?
Yeah, like if Cucurella and
James
get injured.
No one behind Cucurella.
If Cucurella and James get injured together for a spell, I mean, obviously that's quite unlikely to happen for a month. We'd be in trouble. Like, Gusto left back.
I would say that, to be fair, about a lot of teams. But yeah, I do think that we could probably look to add. So I would have, if you'd gone back 18 months, I'd have said, wow, Malagusto's still 20. He's got an exciting future ahead of him. He looks really good. He's going to be Reece James' backup. In fact, I think Chris said that he might even push Reece James for a starting spot, 18 months ago. And I think if you fast forward 18 months, he looks poor. in every game.
I think he just shouldn't be playing under Maresca. I don't think it's the most obvious.
He just shouldn't play in the system. Simple.
I think it's easy to say that. I think he's just dropped off massively. I don't know. Obviously, it doesn't suit him that tactically, but also, like, you know, you can't be putting in. There's nothing to do with Maresca when the ball gets played over the top against LAFC and he gets caught under the ball. The ball just goes straight over his head. I mean,
but it's not his strength, is it? It's like putting Sanchez up front and saying, "Well,
that's still defending."
Cut it wide, isn't it?
That's still defending on the right central side.
Yeah, but he's not used to defending like that. He's grown up defending on the right back with a tall central defender, probably.
Yeah.
He's now been told he's got to be Tosin. I mean, it's just weird.
Nah, I don't. I think you're making.
I mean, Chalobah was playing there before as well.
Yeah.
All I'll say is we've got five defenders on the bench and one injured.
I'd have Chalobah right back or a left back. All day. I'd put Chalobah right back all day over him. All day.
Yeah, I would too.
Ching-Pong's there. He's
So maybe against Tunis, they'll actually, you know, play somebody's, you know, Ashapong and players like that and give them some minutes. Because
he's got a win.
Yeah, but I think that Tunis, I think we can beat. I mean, they're not a great team, but
I would have said that about Flamengo.
No, I think you were wrong about Flamengo.
The odds are way different, but anyway. But yeah, Malagusto is my freezer.
Craig?
I mean, easy freezer. The worst one on the pitch was Cole Palmer, right? I think we've already talked about him, but yeah. I mean, that's his worst FOTMOB rating of his professional career last night. I mean, that just says it all, really. That's his worst ever game. And I agree. Not involved in the game, no influence in the game. Even the touches he got wasn't great. Had no idea what to do. Yeah, just not the spot for him, I don't think, in the game. And if it is, then we've got to work tactically on improving that setup and getting something around him. But yeah, I mean, just like I said, his worst ever game. So
I think most interesting was how many duels he lost.
He didn't have a great game individually, like a lot of players yesterday, regardless of tactically, you know, being in the wrong spot or whatever. Like, he didn't have a great game anyway. But yeah, I mean, he's not even involved in the game.
I think also, silver lining, I think he said immediately, Maresca, that I tried something and it kind of didn't work. I don't think he said that, but he hinted at that. He very rarely does that in the press. He very rarely kind of admits defeat. I don't think it's going to be happening again. I think he learned it. He doesn't do it in game, but I will be shocked if we ever play this system again in a big game this season. I can see us maybe going to like three at the back and going wing backs, maybe something like a bit different, maybe. But definitely not James in midfield. I think that's finished. I think and if Palmer right wing, I think he's done, because I think Palmer will be looking. I mean, Palmer's quite a big personality. He's quite a big name, you know, and it's like he might be looking at him going, "Don't do that again, boss," because I had a terrible game and I'm the man. So
I don't know if you saw him sat on the bench at the end of the game. They showed him. He was sat on his own in the bench at the end of the game.
Palmer.
Palmer. Like, no one was around him. He just had his head in his hands.
He's probably boiling up, wasn't he?
No, I do think he was disappointed.
He's freezing, right? Yeah.
Right, I'll do the actual freezer, the most obvious one.
Not Cole Palmer's worst ever game.
Nicholas Jackson with the worst ever substitute performance in.
But Jackson. Boy, freezing cold moment, for sure.
Well, he didn't even get. Come on, he didn't even. It wasn't on enough time to get a rating on FOTMOB, so.
Did he? I saw he got 4.6, didn't he?
No, I don't think you've got. I think you've got to be on for 5 minutes to get a rating.
You didn't even get a rating. That's a crap.
I'm rated.
Two touches, one was against the geezer's ankle, I think.
I think, you also have to remember what he was doing for the second goal, where he had the guy at the back post, and then as soon as it goes up over his head, his first instinct is to just start running up the pitch, because in his head, he's thinking, not for me. Someone else will have that out. I'll just run up and get ready for the attack. Wrong. He's come back across and your man's just put it in, mate. His reaction to that was to put his foot over someone's leg, his studs, and see red.
I love it.
It's actually, Sorry, Karen. It's one of the worst tackles I've seen from a Chelsea player in a very, very long time. You don't see our players do stupid stuff like that very often.
Like Caicedo sometimes does a few.
Yeah, but he would never do it like that.
He never does it like that, yeah, where it's like just literally nowhere near the ball.
He's never gonna make it, but he tries it and he just catches, like, you know that little split second where he catches him and it looks bad? Like he would never do what Jackson did, just the lazy, just like raking the studs or, you know, exactly, raking the chins. Like,
I think Gusto did it something a little bit similar against Villa a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
He slipped over when he did that. Yeah. He slipped when he did that. I mean, what I'd say about Jackson is the competition's turned up for him with Delap. I know he got the assist in the last game, but this reaction here to help us try and score a goal at 2-1 is diabolical. And you do wonder about his sort of position in the team with that sort of thing, where he's now, well, he's been sent off twice in his last three appearances. So,
I mean, look, you can't keep making mistakes. You're playing for a top club. You know, that Newcastle game was such an important game for us away. You get sent off in the first half, you know, gives us no chance, you know, when we're already 1-0 down. You know, last night, those were the only two games Chelsea have lost since Arsenal, which was like the start of March. You know, and those are both games that you get sent off in. It's just not acceptable. You know, if you want to be at the top level, and Chelsea do, we've been playing well and getting good results, you know, you can't play with 10 men in football matches. That's just not going to happen, especially not from the first half. So it's not good enough. You know, that's the ultimate thing with Jackson. It's not good enough.
I'll just go macro for Jackson. I do think if it was a different kind of summer where they didn't have to offload like 10 players, I do think that they would think about maybe, you know, they've got that Madueke thing. They've obviously put out about Madueke, you know, he's not untouchable. Like, you know, you can come bid for him if you want. You know what I mean? It's like, I think they were thinking Jackson's never going to go this summer. I think, I know you guys said that they probably would, but maybe because it won't be a market, and also just don't think they really, because he's on such a long contract. And
I'd Villa are sniffing around for him.
Yeah, but there might be a little bit of sniffing around, but... And Villa got massive PSR problems. I'm not sure about that. They've got to sell for their buy. But,
well, I think that could be part of the Rodgers deal, right? I think we've done that before.
Maybe. But
Martin and Kellyman, where they...
You have Disasi as well, guys.
It's like a marketplace. We're chucking Disasi for free.
And obviously you've got the Emery link. We're really good under Emery. But like, well, we started his career under Emery at Villarreal. I don't think he'll go this summer, but I do think in a different summer where they didn't have a lot of other admin to do, a lot of other deals to get over the line, I think he might be in trouble, because I think Maresca might be thinking, you know what, you're letting me down. And I think Maresca might have gone, you know what, not go and get Osimhen, but get a Katike through or something like that, because I don't think he will go. But I think in another climate, in another summer where Chelsea didn't have such a busy summer, they got the Club World Cup, and I think he might be... I wouldn't say out of the exit door, but his future would be in doubt. But I think he will stay. And I felt a bit sorry for him, like, when he made that apology. Because you could just tell he's, like, so naive. And, like, he isn't always the brightest bulb in the, whatever you call the bulb shop or whatever. But, like, he does care about Chelsea. He does care. But, like, and I know you said, Craig, that, like, in your dislikes, they, you know, they weren't competing. These players care. Like, Fernandes and Caicedo, they're getting in there, but they kind of just do it in like a naive way.
Exactly, yeah.
Whereas like a Terry will just, like, I don't know, maybe get a booking. I know we got sent off at Barca and stuff. I know Terry sometimes got some stupid reds, but
Rudiger's a great example of a player that was really aggressive and intense, but he never got a red card.
You'll get a booking, and like, but you won't, you know, they care, but to the point where like they're studding players down the shins, you know what I mean? And it's like, it's clearly that, like, he was the main man, and now Delap's here, and he didn't start, and there's something about that. He's come on, and he's tried to prove himself, and it's just gone completely wrong.
Even Delap did something stupid, by the way, in the first half with the elbow.
Yeah, Delap's rashes. I mean, I thought that might have been a rare. I mean, that was awful what he did. But, yeah, I don't know. We just got a young squad who sometimes think competing means studding people down the shins in a VAR era, and it isn't really a thing.
Right, so that's the freezers. Is there any warming up, Brady? Who have you got?
I think, well, I would have it was easily boiling hot in the LA game, and I think he was warming up in this game. You've got to give it to Pedro Neto. I mean, what I liked about him, in these games, is he often has a really good build up, but, you know, looks good, you know, some good dribbling, some good position, and obviously off the ball, he's probably our best off the ball winger. I think we can all safely say that. Like he hustles. He almost plays like a wing back sometimes. Very good at terms of kind of getting the ball back and hustling. But he showed some end product, and especially the LA goal. I mean, the LA goal was good. Like to chop back and then, I mean, that defender. I think I can't remember his name. He was like 34-year-old guy. I mean, he got stitched up really. he was stumbling over. All over the shop, but yeah, I mean, even yesterday when he was through on goal, I didn't really back him to score because like his body position was a bit weird, and it looked like he's going to put it closer to the goalkeeper, which he did. But he got it, you know, he put it in. So fair play to Neto. Like I've always said that, like he's got a good build up, but if he adds the finish, I've always my issue with him has always been the numbers. He needs more goals, but he's got 2-2. So you know, fair play. Like if you start scoring lots of goals, and you know, we know that he's an assist for it. Then great. So yeah, it's been a good tournament for him so far, obviously.
Yeah, I'm you know, a fan of Pedro Neto. I think he's got the right sort of mentality, and I think he's improving that connection. Like I said, down that right hand side, when Reece James plays that right centre back, Caicedo plays right midfield, Palmer in the inside 10, and Neto outside him. I think that right side is so strong, not just attacking, defensive, up and down, build up, everything. Good ball players. Players with intelligence. You know, if you talk about Reece James, Caicedo, Palmer, Neto on that right side playing triangles, passes in between each other, it's hard to get the ball off any of them. They're so intelligent with the ball as well. And we started doing with Palmer and Neto on that right side, where Palmer goes outside, Neto comes inside, a bit more into play with there, a little bit harder to predict. When Palmer gets the ball and drives down that right side, Neto started cutting in. And he's looking for that inside pass a few times. That's something we've just introduced into our game the last three games. Really, really good. And I think that combination down that side is really strong, and one that will be strong for at the start of the season for us as well. So yeah, I give a lot of credit to Neto. He's come on a lot.
We know Neto's abilities, so I think it's good to see the goals.
He was called a superstar last night by them. I thought that was a bit strong. But he's doing better.
Yeah, it did take him some time. Obviously, look, you come from Wolves. They play purely counter-attack, especially under O'Neill. They literally just like sat back and look into counter-attack most games. And that's probably, you know, good with the setup they had. But it's a completely different style of play at Chelsea. You know, completely different. It has taken him a bit of time. But I do think, you know, he's 25 years old, coming into his prime. He's got a good chance to take a big step this year, contribute with, you know, 10, 12 goals. In this Prem, that'd be
Well, it's a World Cup year, right? And I'm not sure, is he first choice right winger for Portugal? Is he? I don't know. Is he?
I think he does play. Yeah,
but there must be some competition. You know, João Félix hanging around. So you know, it's a World Cup year. A lot of these players, even Madueka, they're going to want minutes. You know, they're going to want to prove themselves. So that is also a factor. So you know, we might get some improved performances because of that. Let's give a little. Have you guys got another warming up or boiling hot or?
I've got warming up, yeah. I mean, it's warming up, I think, for me is Tosin. I thought he was really, really good against LAFC. And I think he's established himself now. I think if you were to talk about our best team right now, it's Tosin's in it. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think, you know, he's taken a bit of a step, I think, as a centre-back. He gives us a lot of, you know, stability as well, defending set pieces and attacking set pieces, but defending set pieces as well. I thought we really struggled with that last night, defending set pieces, because aerially we were a bit weak, just overall on the team. And that's the case when you have players, you know, if you look at our overall players, you know, Delap obviously gives us something, but when Jackson plays, Palmer can't head, Neto can't head the ball, Madueke pathetic in the air, Lavia can't head the ball. You know, all our attacking players are pretty poor in the air. So I think giving that moment, you know, Chalobah's decent in the air, but Tosin is a beast in the air. So, you know, even you look at our left back in Kukurea, he's good in the air for his size, but he's not actually good in the air. So we are left a bit short set pieces. I thought they really exploited that last night, Flamenco. So, yeah, we give a shout out to Tosin, because I know I've been a bit critical of him this season, but I've changed my mind on him. I think he can do a job for us for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think you've seen off the pitch what he can do. There was even a bit before the game where Palmer went up to him. I know it was during a drinks break, sorry. And Palmer literally went up to him and was asking him, like, for advice. Like, he just basically, he's not a captain, but he's clearly one of the captains in the dressing room and the leader. And yeah, he's definitely improved. That, I've said it before, that performance versus Nottingham Forest, where he, you know, kind of really looked after Chris Wood, was really impressive. And Yeah, I think, you know, he's... I mean, I know they're looking at a centre-back, but we're not really looking at any centre-backs of any real... I mean, they're looking at Jarrell Hatto, right, from Ajax. And Gueye's going to be quiet in terms of that going on, so maybe they won't add any big centre-backs to the group. We haven't really heard anything, so I'm not saying they shouldn't, but maybe they're thinking of relying on Fofana coming back. But you have to say, like, if Fofana stayed fit, I think as a unit, like, Colwill, Fofana... fit and raring to go, and Tosin as Chalobah at backup. So I think that's pretty decent, to be honest, as a four. I mean, there's maybe no one elite in there, but it's a solid centre-back contingent. So, yeah, it's an interesting decision what they're going to do. Chris, you got any warmings up?
Warming up for me, well, yeah, I guess I would probably have put Tosin, I think. I'm not sure anyone else has really...
Got a little special mention. I think the Laps had a pretty good start, man. I think he's...
I mean, it was hard to judge yesterday because the team overall just played so poorly in that first half. But yeah,
you can see the upside. You can see what he brings, the physicality, and, you know, that spilled over like he did for everyone against Flamengo yesterday. But that assist was really good. I didn't really think he had that in his locker, to be honest. As you said that, we were like... You know, that Jackson assist, which was also, I think, probably better, but really good against LFC, and really good assist. But I was thinking, well, I'm not sure Delap could do that. But he did. I mean, maybe he can. I mean, if he can provide some assist for it, and he's clearly, I mean, that chance he had yesterday, he didn't score, but he can just put, you back in to score more in that position, Jackson, because he can put his foot through it, you know? He can get some power in it. You can generate power from, like, a low back lift. So you can see the upside. You know, is he going to... Can he lead us and get 20 goals next season? I'm not sure about that, but you can definitely see the upside of him in the future.
I think if he's playing, I think you can definitely see him getting to kind of Abraham's 15, because I think he's a very good finisher, like Tammy was. But is he the player to get us to win the league? I'm not sure yet. We'll have to wait and see. You can just get better players around him. I think... Obviously, it's difficult because no one's really playing low blocks, so we don't really know what he's going to be like in that spot. He's not really played that before, I'm pretty sure. So, yeah, look, he looks busy, active. Hard to know, really. I don't think he's presented himself as like a, wow, this guy looks amazing. But he looks good. I think that's... Looks all right. What do you think,
Craig? Yeah, I was excited about Delap. I think, you know, all these young players that can come in and at 22, they can always take a big step coming to a big club like this. You know, that's obviously the ceiling and one of the key aspects of coming in at that age. You know, the recruitment policy that we have, you know, this back end part, signing the younger players. You know, he can come in, contribute and take a big step, and, you know, he'll be given a chance, certainly at the start of the season, with Jackson being suspended. He'll have match week one at home to Crystal Palace to cement himself as a starter at Chelsea. And that is that's a big, big, you know, chance for him. And also, you know, he's on a low wage, I think 120k a week, which is, you know, fantastic for a striker on a long contract. There's no downside with Leon Delap as a signing. He's got a huge ceiling and a pretty high floor, so exciting.
Yeah, I think for me, like, if you're looking for Chelsea buying young players at a good price, certainly at 30 million, he's a good price. I think if you had to negotiate for him without a release clause, Chelsea probably would end up paying like 45. So I feel like they've got a good player at a good price. So this feels like a good deal if you're looking at it from a deal perspective. So yeah.
It's just looking at it, I said that before, is Delap and Jackson enough? And it sounds like that's what they're going to go with. So
really? It sounds like, for me, that all the feelers are out for basically every single striker that's available in Europe.
Shesko's going to Arsenal, right? Osimhen won't come to Chelsea because the wages are too big.
Gyökeres looks like he might go United.
Yeah, Gyökeres going to United. So that leaves you...
We've been heavily linked with... Yeah, Ekotike,
like I said, I think will be used more as like a forward. Like
I think Ekotike and João Pedro that we've been linked with can both play at nine.
We know the player we want up front. We knew it last summer. It's just about whether they can actually
Osterman.
Get it done, yeah. And then he wants to play for Chelsea.
They're never going
to
get
frustrated. He wants to play for Chelsea, but only if they pay him $325,000.
I know sometimes Matt, you know, some people are a bit funny about what Matt Law says, but he says that, you know, that he finds it a bit, no real Premier League clubs have been in for him. And that maybe is a bit of a red flag about maybe about attitude, or because they kind of character check these players. Maybe there's been a bit of behind the scenes where his attitude's not the best.
I think it's just wages. I think he's expecting something from like 4 or 5 years ago, where players are getting paid, you know, monster wages in the Prem. No one's getting paid that. No player in the Premier League has been handed out those wages in the last 2 or 3 years.
I think after Nkunku, they're just never going to go for that. Yeah.
Yeah, Casemiro is probably the last one. And what was that, 4 years ago? Three, 4 years ago?
Kai Havertz.
Yeah, again, what's that, 2.5 years ago now? I don't think, no, nothing has happened recently since PSR. I think clubs are realising that the big wages is the big pitfall down the line, because you get stuck with these players. Casemiro is a great example at United, where you can't shift them and you're paying them, you know, huge, huge money, £15 million a year. That's monster money.
But I think we're going to see, I don't know what they're going to do with Mbeumo and Gyökeres, and I don't know what Kenny's on at United.
So, I haven't seen that yet either, but you know, he wasn't on a massive wage at Wolves, so
£200,000 a week, man.
Yeah, so that's more. That's the new top end, isn't it? No one's getting the big Casemiro £350,000 a week money anymore. It's basically halved. And I think, you know, Osimhen's agent, from what we hear, obviously they negotiated with him last year. He wants £300,000 a week guaranteed, and he will drop it if they get out of the Champions League and things like that. I think that's the reason you're not seeing Osimhen linked with Premier League clubs, is that he's more interested in the big money.
Ornstein, Jacobs, Romano, they say it's difficult. And that's basically code for it, ain't it?
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to happen. There's no noise of Osimhen to Chelsea whatsoever.
I think they would sign him if he would negotiate on that. So we'll see what he does, see how much he wants to play. And I know he's turned down Saudi, so there is a chance.
Yeah. And I think if you sign Osimhen, you've got to sell Jackson. So that's what I mean. It's
no.
Yeah, but I'm not saying that, but it's a lot of admin. I mean, these people are humans. Like, they've got to get a lot of deals over the line. We've got to sell so many players. Like, it's they're huge deals to get over. That would take weeks to get Osimhen in, and then Jackson out. They probably haven't got the time to get this all done, to be honest.
Our transfer window hadn't opened yet, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's just such a tiny turnaround.
There's a lot to do.
Yeah, they're just going to focus on getting the Disasis, Chilwell. There's so much, like, you know, Carney, all these like Sterling, all these deals. They've got to get loans, all sorts. It's got loads of
stuff. Have we done Boiling Hot yet? We're at almost an hour of the pod.
Yeah. I think Boiling Hot was Neto for the LAFC games.
Yeah, there's no one Boiling Hot really in this setup.
Yeah, can I give a quick shout out to Sanchez, because I think he's been decent across the two games. And he's not the reason we're losing games anymore.
He got beat for that first goal last night. I don't know why. You know, when it crossed him, I don't think that was his fault.
No, that was obviously a tough one. Yeah.
Angle of it, he's got no chance.
And also, I just think he's bought himself some leeway. He's doing all right.
Two words, man. High claims. Every time a cross comes in, he's got it. Lovely.
Yeah.
No, I think his distribution against Flamengo was poor.
Yeah, but I do think that was partly down again. Like, I think we saw that, you know, at the start of last season when you know, the players aren't in the right position with the build-up and stuff. It makes it really hard to find players. And I think, you know, yes, last night was just a bit of a mess build-up-wise.
When you've got the lap up there, it will stick up top more if he pings it. It just will. Like, it the numbers will go up. It'll just get better.
He almost got an assist, didn't he? That was a great... I think Delap could have done better there.
I do as well, yeah.
I think he bottled it.
The one where the defender nearly put it in.
Yeah. He should have. He could have just put his body in between the ball and the player. Yeah. He just sort of, I don't know, kind of just...
Or he could have got the guy sent off or something. He could have got himself kicked in the head and got the guy sent off or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, he could have been a bit stronger maybe, but maybe being a bit harsh. But...
We'll find out. Right. Onwards and upwards. We've got two nifs coming up. But one thing that did happen... a long time ago now, last Wednesday, was the fixtures were released for Chelsea and all the rest of the Premier League teams and some of the rest of the Football League. for the season. So what do we think of the fixtures? Obviously, home to Palace, first game, and away to Sunderland being the last game, and then some fun in between.
I think the start is really nice for us because, you know, we'll be having a bit of a hangover maybe from this competition. You know, we'll get some new signings in. I think that the slow start to the season suits us. I always like slow starts to the season anyway. You know, last year, Man City at home, the champions, you know, coming into town. But, you know, that it's not when we got a new manager and a new system, that's not what we need. You know, Palace at home is, you know, obviously they're not, won't be an easy match. But it is a nice opening fixture compared to, you know, what it could have been. And I think that suits us this year with everything going on.
The FA Cup winners.
I think being in the Cup World Cup, to have two home games, and then you've only got, it's basically Palace at home, just logistically, West Ham away, and then Fulham at home. It's just not much travelling, right? It's just,
and just, then Brentford, so we've got four London derbies.
Brentford, so basically you haven't got to go anywhere essentially till late September. That's a bit of a touch, really. Like, no travelling, basically just based in London. That things like that help. And then, you know, the first, the toughest game, well, I don't know, you might even say Brentford away is tougher than Man United away, let's be honest. But then you've got Brighton at home, which obviously we've done pretty well against Brighton at home recently. So, yeah, I think it's like a 7, 8 out of 10 in terms of fixtures, like in terms of if you had the FPL ticker. I mean, there'd be a lot of players on, there'd be a lot of FPL players on Parma because of Chelsea's fixtures, because they're pretty good. So it's really good that we haven't got that, you know, Man City at home like we did last season and things like that. So with the Club World Cup, it's worked out quite nicely for us.
May 2013, last time we won at Old Trafford. There you go.
Yeah, but we very rarely lose there, right?
Yeah, look, I mean, that game, wasn't it, like, the so many draws, right?
Yeah, it's just always a draw. But, like, yeah. Look, it's not an easy game, but it's, you know, it's not like you've got Arsenal second and then Man City fourth, do you know what I mean? It's like, it's,
if know, we, yeah. Looking at the run-in, obviously, I'm not sure what we'll be challenging for. Who knows? But if we were, we've got sort of Forest at home in May, Liverpool away, and then Tottenham at home, and then Sunderland away. How do we like the back end if we were anywhere near the top?
Not too bad. I can't imagine, you know, obviously those.
Got no idea Forest are going to be this strong this season. Liverpool away, I mean, Liverpool might have won the league by then. I mean, they might have. I mean, I
think they might have, to be fair. Yeah, they're looking pretty strong again.
And then Tottenham at home. So, I mean, no comment. It's, you know, 3-point lane, but we're at home. And Sunderland away, obviously. I mean, they might have been a relegation dogfight. I mean, you don't know. Fixtures are kind of defined by what happens, right? Like, if Sunderland are already down or Liverpool won the league, it's more difficult. Or, you know,
lucky, weren't we, with the Liverpool that we got at home at the back end. They put their second string out.
Yeah, it's like, I'm looking at a fixture here, like Wolves away, where we won 6-2 and we're playing them in February. You might look at that and go, well, that's probably 3 points, but they might be the team that really turns up. They might really improve and it might be a tough game. You don't know, really. The fixtures are dependent really on form throughout the season as well, right? So, yeah.
No game scheduled yet for Boxing Day or New Year's Day, but obviously the TV can move those games. Bit of an interesting situation around player welfare.
The Christmas period will be shuffled around, but we've got Villa at home, right? Boxing Day.
Villa at home, yeah. And then we've got Bournemouth at home and City away, kind of in that Christmas peak, New Year period. So that'll be two home games good. We've got Newcastle away just before the Villa game, so it's a bit of awkward travelling there. Difficult game.
I just feel like that game is like a guaranteed loss every year, Newcastle away. We lose that game. I can't imagine. The last time we went up to Newcastle away in December was one of the worst games I've seen us play under Tuchel, if not the worst. I don't know if you remember it, but we had so many players out injured.
Loftus-Cheek, right back, and then he got injured. Oh, no, that was Potter, wasn't it?
We had an awful game there under Potter, but under Tuchel, we lost there and had a horrendous game as well.
I think that was Potter. I think you're getting them conflated.
Yeah, that was Potter, wasn't it? And then Loftus-Cheek went off after like 5 minutes. And Gallagher went at right wing back.
We were both there and we won 3-0, mate.
So he played multiple games, Tuchel, right, away at Newcastle.
I think he ever lost to Newcastle away, mate.
James scored, didn't he? Okay, any fixture that you're really looking forward to? What most interested fixture for you guys?
Well, I always care about the Arsenal home game. That's a massive game for us, and obviously I think Arsenal probably will be back up there next season as one of the benchmarks, and just, yeah, that's always a massive game for me.
End of November, Saturday.
Nice. Like, it's the November really game.
Any one particular one stands out, you've got your favourites. That Spurs at home is always good. I think Liverpool at home, you know, it'd just be actually around just after my birthday, actually, so that'd be good. You know, you'd have had five or six games to, you know, get your eye in terms of like fitness, and we'll test ourselves against the best team in the league. Well, the best team in the league last year. So I'm looking forward to that. I think that'd be a good barometer to see where we're at.
I think Everton away, 21st of March. Let's see how good this team is.
Is that your favourite?
It's a game Everton that you go, away. Oh, yeah, you should win that. And then the game is like, oh, I'll just forget about it.
0-0 or the 1-0.
When's the last time we scored at Everton? Was that penalty under Tuchel, maybe?
Yeah.
Last minute. Yeah, the fixtures are looking okay, but we'll focus more on that later as we come up to the season. Other news is obviously Madrid was charged by the FA, so we don't know his ban length, but could be up to 4 years. Bit of a tricky one for the club, how they negotiate around that. I'm sure more details will be revealed. Any comment on that? Any insights?
Not from me.
I think you try to move the player on. I mean, I know Craig said you said that try and retain value and maybe you'll play. I mean, I can't see it being less than 18 months. I think they'll make an example of him, to be honest. It's not like certain bans we can get around it. Doping bans, there's no way around it. And if you can reduce it, then it'll be, I think it'll be 18 months minimum, 4 years max. And if that's the case, he has to leave the club because he doesn't really have like a future at the club. So
good for PSR, right? That, if you get rid of him.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know what's gone on. Like, you don't know whether. I know you go to the gym a lot, right? Like getting on Instagram, maybe, I don't know. There literally might have been someone at the gym gave him like a, I don't know. He just done something stupid. Someone gave him like a smoothie. Or it could be, you don't know. Like, I mean, I'm a big fan of boxing, and sometimes these boxers just drink the wrong thing. They're not thinking, and they didn't mean it, or maybe he did it intentionally. I don't know. But it's obviously an awful situation for the player and not a good situation for the club to manage. So I just can't really see him having a future with the kind of player he is. He'll need time to get that embedded back in. The wing spot is already we're already buying Gittens, and you know, you've got other players there. I don't really see a future for him at the club, I'll be honest.
There you go. All right. Well, you'll be up early watching Tunis on Tuesday, 2 a.m.
Probably pass on that, but I might set my alarm, don't I?
Brady?
No, that'll probably be a rewatch for me in the morning, I think, if I'm being honest. I mean, we'll try, but we'll do a pod for it. But I am expecting a comfortable victory there.
Cool, right. Thank you very much, guys. That's all we've got time for today.
No worries.
No worries at all.
For more updates on all things ESCR, you can follow us on X at EatSleepChelsea and Instagram at EatSleepChelseaRepeat. And as always, we hope you're carefree wherever you may be. And thanks for listening.